Hey, it's Andrew Siciliano. Coming up on Inside Coverage, the 49ers are going to the Super Bowl and they're never going to have to leave home. What happened in Pittsburgh? I'll tell you why Myles Garrett was right. Does somebody have to win the NFC South? We looked into it. We'll tell you the answer. Plus, who disappointed us the most? Not Charles Robinson nor Frank Schwab. They join me next on Inside Coverage. It's another edition. It's a, hey, we're almost done with the regular season. Monday edition of Inside Coverage on Yahoo. Hope you had a great holiday weekend. Everybody shared it with friends and family and, you know, football. And you enjoyed those Christmas Day games, weren't they? Just a blast. The Friday, like every, we hope you had a great time. And we're happy that you're back with us for the how and the why, any and everything you need to know about the National Football League. My name is Andrew Siciliano, back at home in the home office in Southern California after a rainy Sunday in Cleveland. We'll get to that game coming up in a little bit. This is our wrap up of week 17. And as we recorded, there's still the one game, the Rams and the Falcons, which does have some meaning in the NFC yet to be played. But we'll look at the rest of the week and we'll do that with my good friends, Charles Robinson and Frank Schwab, smiling faces both on your screen right now, Yahoo senior NFL writer. Gentlemen, it's good to see you. Charles, did Santa bring you everything that you asked for?
Yeah, I mean, I it was funny because I was watching the game last night and I asked this question in sincerity, even though we have not had the elite teams this year. Okay. Couldn't we argue this is one of the greatest NFL seasons ever? Like when you think about the Seahawks comeback in overtime, when you think about the Bears' insane comeback win, when you think about last night's game, I mean, we've had so many games from the beginning of the season to the end where I think you could argue if you really stacked it up. I mean, there have probably been 15, 20 extremely memorable games this season with just improbable things happening.
Ridiculous games. I actually tweeted last night at the end of that game, or maybe in the fourth quarter, whatever, like game of the year. And then, you know, to your point.
Yeah, how many times have you said
Frank,
that?
I was like, wait a minute, didn't I tweet this on the Thursday night with the Rams and the Seahawks?
Yeah.
That Bills comeback against the Ravens seems like it was 6 years ago, but it actually was still week one. I mean, you're Sunday absolutely right. And I hadn't thought about that, Charles, but you are right. We have had an inordinate number of unbelievable games. And wide open MVP race, which I enjoy too. The one thing I was worried about was week 18 is going to be meaningless because there was a doomsday scenario for the NFL and its broadcasting partners that everything kind of settles in week 17, the NFC South and the AFC North and all this kind of stuff. The NFL got really lucky, really, really lucky in week 17 that we have three winner-take-all division games that they could program for Saturday and for Sunday night. So even that worked out in their favor. Yeah, I like the wide openness of it all. It has been a phenomenal season. So many storylines, so many players emerging, whatnot. You might be right. This is one of the better seasons I remember.
It's a great point because so much of the headlines or so many of the headlines have been the last few weeks. Like, who's really good here? There's no super team. Mahomes is out and Joe Burrow is out and the Bills have to go on the road and maybe Lamar Jackson is out and maybe Aaron Rodgers doesn't make it. And the Lions are disappointing and the Vikings are disappointing. We'll get to them coming up in a little bit. Who has let you down most at the end of the year? I mean, don't we all kind of do this deep down inside? Who has really let us down this year and how do we move on next year? We'll do it for your teams. Okay, but instead of looking at it that way, you know, see, Rob, I like what you're saying. It's the wide openness, the parity, as some would call it, is kind of cool, as are the worst to first stories. The Patriots, worst to first. Mm-hmm. The Bears, worst to first. The Jaguars were picking in the top five last year. They go worst to first, and they do it, by the way, without the player for whom they traded the farm. So, like, those are all great stories. I like a chaos scenario heading into the postseason. Who wouldn't like a chaos scenario? Like, do you want, like, the NCAA thing? Well, somebody's undefeated. They're like, you got to knock off Duke. There is no Duke. This is fun.
No, I agree.
And what? One of the greatest things that happened. I'm watching the Jets Patriots, and obviously they run point. And no. I see the clip of Mike Vrabel walking by Drake May, and he says something, and then I see Drake May's face, and I'm like, what did Vrabel just say? And I backed it up, and I'm like, I can't tell what he said. Well, of course, we find out later, or at least speculatively, that he was speaking of the Jets, and he turned to Drake May and said, bleep him, like F him, and as he's running it up. And you're just looking at Drake May, and I'm like, that kid is like, okay, so this is what we are now. This is who we are. We're this. This is our mentality.
Touchdowns on their first six drives, right? Is that what it was? Touchdowns on their first six drives.
Drake May was out of the game with 5 minutes left in the third quarter. Yeah. Like, they would be crazy. Until the fourth. They're like, whatever. We got this.
So, I'm at Browns Steelers. We're calling that game. And, you know, you go to every break and you look down, you look at the scores. Oh, look, Tennessee's out to the lead. Saints eventually came back. Oh, look at this. Oh, look, wow. Look, Bills are taking it. Or rather, Patriots are taking it at the Jets. You look down. They scored again. You look down. They scored again. Every time we went to commercial, the Patriots scored another touchdown. It was just absurd, which is kind of the way, by the way, that Sunday night game felt. I was flying back from Cleveland. Let's do the Sunday night game. The game's ridiculous. Niners beat the Bears 42-38. Caleb Williams had a shot of the end zone, end of the game. He almost made one of those amazing Caleb Williams plays. He could not connect in the end zone, and Brock Purdy and the 49ers hang on. Those Purdy numbers are absurd, and it's more than the numbers. 303 and 5 total touchdowns. He threw 3. He ran for 2. It's some of the plays that he made, like that play right over in the red zone next to the sideline, left sideline, top of the screen, where he's dancing around, and then throwing that touchdown to Juszczyk. I was flying back, and hey, United Airlines, bless you for the new 6:09 p.m. direct from Cleveland to LAX. Please, I beg of you, this is all I want for Christmas. Can you keep it? Can you keep it for a few more months? I know it goes away in 2 weeks. It doesn't need to go away in 2 weeks. Just keep that flight, please. The direct is a game changer. Anyway, like when he made that play, C-Rob, I let out an audible wow on the plane, which is, you know, kind of as I have a loud voice. It's startling. Matter of fact, I was sitting next to a little dog. The dog got freaked out. But that's how well the 49ers played. And now they get to face the Seahawks this weekend on Saturday. And there's a chance they do not leave their building the rest of the season.
Yeah, I mean, it's insane. And I mentioned it earlier when you talk about the coach of the year race. I've seen the betting odds, and I know, you know, Mike Vrabel's, it seems like he's a slight favorite elsewhere. And, you know, it was weeks ago, Frank said, you know, this might be Mike Shanahan's best coaching job of his entire career.
Maybe even Kyle Shanahan's.
I'm sorry, Kyle Shanahan's. And, you know, hey, Mike's
sure Mike
Kyle.
Can still coach.
Somewhere out there, Mike's like, yeah, damn right. You're right. This is my best coaching job. Look at what my kids doing. With the injuries, having gone in there, all the defections, every single player who goes down, I keep thinking to myself, okay, this is when it breaks. And just to see how they continually raise their level of play and for Purdy to have the game that he had last night, I mean, that's the contract extension. That's the guy that they signed. Yeah. That is the guy who I remember when he was a rookie and he made a play. And I remember Trent Williams going out of his mind on the field. I thought to myself, like, that is so unusual to see of all people on this planet decide to follow a 6-foot rookie, you know, just Trent Williams, you know, amping him up on the field. And, you know, the leadership abilities, just the ability to spread the ball around. Obviously, Christian McCaffrey, you know, has become the spine, I think, again, of this team all season long, goes over 2,000 scrimmage yards. But, you know, defensively, you can't have a game where, you know, you're 7-7, 14-14, 21-21, 28-28, 35-35. At some point, you have to, you know, raise that level defensively. But the 49ers, to me, are... If there weren't so many other stories of the year with teams, the 49ers to me would easily, you know, check in at number one. I've never seen a coach have this kind of a season where he's lost a multitude of players, dealt with, you know, this many subs and still raised the bar to the point of potentially having a number one seed. And if they get to the Super Bowl, a home, you know, Super Bowl in Levi Stadium. So it's unfolded, I think, better than anyone could have expected. I guess I would just ask you guys, I mean, can this be maintained? Can it be maintained realistically?
And that's the problem I have, Charles, is that I'm so stuck with the 49ers where I can't think of a comp of a Super Bowl champion having this bad of a defense. I mean, they're 26th in DVOA right now. I guess the comp is the Colts team that won, finally broke through with Peyton Manning. But they got really good in the playoffs on defense out of nowhere. And yeah, they had to face Rex Grossman in the Super Bowl. I just sit here and I'm like, the 49ers can't do this. The defense is not championship quality. And it's what we know why. It's because Bosa and Warner are hurt. But they keep doing it. They're 13-3. And the Kyle Shanahan thing, yes, I've been on my soapbox most of the season talking about Kyle basically since week 5 when they beat the Rams in overtime in that game. And I don't think it's just the best coaching job this year. I think it's the best coaching job in many years. When you look at what they've dealt with, don't forget that going back, Brock Purdy missed 8 games, and there were a lot of people, I hope you all deleted these receipts, that said, maybe Mac Jones should be starting over Brock Purdy because he's playing so well. Like, that's Kyle Shanahan. When we all gush about this offense and how well it's playing, and oh my goodness, yeah, Brock Purdy's playing great. I'm not taking anything away from him. But this is Kyle Shanahan. This is Kyle Shanahan's coaching. He is on such a heater as a play caller. So I sit there and I say, okay, yep, their defense stinks, but they're 13-3. And if they win Sunday, they got 2 home games from a home Super Bowl. Why not? They could just maybe outscore everybody for 2 more games. So maybe this is sustainable. I didn't think they'd ever be at 13-3 at this point in the season, ever.
They have no pass rush. Fred Warner is out, although, you know, we're getting this vibe that maybe, just maybe, if they make the Super Bowl, he could come back. We should also note that Fred Warner was amazing as a pregame analyst on Sunday Night Football and NBC's coverage on Football Night in America. He was fantastic. I texted my guy, Jack Collinsworth, who's obviously on that set. I was watching on the plane. I'm like, damn, this guy's good. He's like, yeah, he'll have a TV career as soon as he wants one. He was great. So Fred Warner is out. Bosa obviously is out. Bosa's not coming back. He tore up his knee. And Michael Williams, their first-round pick, he is out as well. It is a who's he defense. When I saw them, what is it, a month ago in Cleveland, you're going through their roster, getting ready for the game, and you're like, how is this team winning? Well, Browns can win this game. Clearly, they did not. I know I'm the Sunday morning optimist. But on paper, they're not supposed to be winning. Yet, they are. That speaks a lot to the job Robert Saleh is doing. We've talked a lot about that, and we will undoubtedly when we get past Black Monday and we go into the coaching carousel and all the hires in January. Saleh is obviously going to get plenty of interview requests, but Purdy is shutting everybody up. Everybody up. He got paid, and then, listen, I was not one of the people that said Mac Jones needed to play, like, oh, keep Brock on the bench. I was not one of those people, but I was. I was one of the people who, as a host of a show like this, rolled the ball out there and went, hey, you just wait. You just wait. If Purdy doesn't come back, see Robin, light it up, you're going to hear those calls. All he's done, back-to-back 5 touchdown games.
Yeah, it's been ridiculous. Yeah, no, he's been, I mean, he is, again, I think he shows you why they paid him. This is what they thought ultimately they could get out of him in terms of really what that ceiling was. He can't be this every week. But I think if he can give them these kinds of games sprinkled throughout a season, you know, and Kyle Shanahan can continue to manufacture a running game, find a running back beyond Christian McCaffrey in the future. I mean, it's sustainable that Brock Purdy can be the quarterback that Kyle Shanahan finally settles on long term, a quarterback who does not go into his doghouse in 3 years. And we're talking about, you know, who Kyle's looking for next. I will ask you this.
Did you know he had that scramble play? I'm sorry, real quick. The one I was talking about before over on the sideline where he danced around and then found Juszczyk. Did you know he had that club in his bag?
Yeah, I think when you – I do. I think when you watched him at Iowa State.
And that was something dancing, like
– yeah. I remember Kyle telling me one time it might have been Brock's second year in the league or maybe third – going into his third year. And Kyle told me he went back to watch some old tape on Clemson. And it was an Iowa State game. And he was watching it and he was kicking himself because he's like – I watched all the things that Brock was doing in terms of movement, eluding guys, manufacturing plays off script. He was doing it against Clemson. And he's like, how did I miss this? He's like, I don't remember seeing this guy, and obviously wouldn't have drafted him with last pick in the draft if I had really paid that close of attention to this. And he just, I think it was something that he had kind of gapped, but I think it was there at Iowa State. Let me ask you this real quick about the 49ers, though. The one comp that worries me about this is I think back to 2020 and Mike Vrabel and the Tennessee Titans, and they had like 50 guys miss games with injuries over the course of that season. I can't remember if Mike won coach of the year that year. I think he may have. They end up going 11-5, and then they lose in the first round of the playoffs to the Baltimore Ravens in the wild card. And I think they may have even been the number two seed, I want to say, that in those playoffs. But regardless, they went 11-5. They felt gassed. Like they hit the first round of the playoffs, and they just looked like a team that had kind of spent every single thing they had and really getting themselves to the peak and making the playoffs. And then all of a sudden it just sort of disintegrated in the first round. And I remember us thinking at that time, or myself thinking, I kind of expected this, you know, like how can you overcome injuries over and over and over, not lose something eventually? And then when you finally trip, this is when it happens in the playoffs. That's the only thing I worry about with the 49ers, particularly given how that defense plays.
Yeah, I mean, that's the concern. And you already see it with the defense. Like, the defense is depleted. This defense, they're going to have to win playoff games 42-38 like they did last night. And they're not always going to get so lucky that, you know, Ben Johnson doesn't have the best job of time management in the final drive, right? Like, sometimes Caleb Williams is going to make that play and beat you. What are we talking about if Caleb Williams completes that final pass? We're sitting here saying, oh my goodness, the 49ers going one and done because their defense just isn't good enough. Now they win, and the whole narrative changes. I get that, but it's just, it's been such a weird season. If we talk about no great team, all that kind of stuff, that maybe we're gonna have a weird champion that can't play defense, but generally that's not how it works in the playoffs. Like, somebody comes in there, and Jordan Love comes in there at wildcard weekend, Matthew Stafford throws for 6 touchdowns. I mean, something like that's going to happen, and I just don't know if the offense can be expected to put up 49 points and win a divisional round playoff game.
So as we sit here record Monday night, I mentioned before, we're doing this before the Monday night game in Atlanta. The number one seed in the NFC, if you don't know already, and if we haven't made it clear, will be either the 49ers or the Seahawks. The game is in Santa Clara, and the game is Saturday evening on ESPN. There is still seeding up in the up for grabs in the NFC. We still don't know who is going to win the NFC South. It's either the Bucks or the Panthers. However, the Atlanta result on Monday night does actually matter. Bear with me here. If the Falcons beat the Rams and then the Falcons win again in week 18 and Atlanta week 18, I'm checking my schedule, or gets the Saints, that game is in Atlanta. So if the Falcons win 2, it gives the Panthers a back door to get in, even with a loss to the Buccaneers in week 18. I know that makes no sense, but that back door is there. And the Falcons and the Panthers, rather the Bucks and the Panthers, that NFC South title game is also on Saturday. So the NFC basically is set. In the AFC, Denver beats the Chargers, and Denver will be the number one overall seeding at home field throughout the AFC playoffs. They get the week off. Late in the afternoon on Monday, Jim Harbaugh announced, not John Harbaugh, Jim Harbaugh announced that Justin Herbert, who was beaten and battered, and it's lucky he got out of that game against the Texans alive Saturday night, will not play in week 18. They're going to protect him against the Broncos. You say, what do you mean? You're still fighting for seeding if you're the Chargers. Yes, but we know you're a wild card. You're either the 5, the 6, or the 7, and you're going to play any of the same combination of teams in all likelihood, and that will be the Patriots, the Jaguars, or whomever wins the AFC North. Does it really matter? You are going on the road, and even if you beat the Broncos, you can't guarantee any of those three will be your road opponent in the wild card weekend. So they're going to shut them down. As for the AFC North, it'll be the Ravens or the Steelers. That is game 272. If that's the one that you had picked for the NBC, Tirico and Collinsworth, goodbye to the regular season, then congratulations, you are the winner. Two things happen of note. Saturday, without Lamar Jackson, the Ravens, still with Tyler Huntley, beat the Packers. And then, with a chance for the Steelers to beat the Browns and win the AFC North and make Week 18 absolutely irrelevant, you know what they did? They lost to the Browns. And it was the most predictable thing of all time, says the Browns fan and says the guy that works for the Browns and says the guy that doesn't like the Steelers. I know, come at me. But the Browns have now beaten the Steelers four consecutive at Huntington Bank Field. Kevin Stefanski is now 5-1 against the Steelers at home. Six of the last 7 years, the Browns and Steelers have split the season series, and the Steelers have not beaten the Browns in Cleveland without Ben Roethlisberger since the year before Ben Roethlisberger was drafted in 2003. It has been that long. Myles Garrett did not get his record-breaking sack. And after the game, Myles Garrett stated what was blatantly obvious to anybody who was in the building.
To an extent, I feel like they were more worried about keeping me away from Aaron than, you know, getting the win. And I think that's what came back to bite them. So, you know, they'll have to, you know, fight it out with Baltimore next week. But I'm just proud of the guys for fighting and getting this win. That's the main thing, and I'm always going to keep it that.
Thank you, Myles Garrett, for saying what was so obvious during that game. Aaron Rodgers would have thrown the ball backwards if he had to avoid being the guy that Myles Garrett sacked for the single season record. It's one thing to run away from him. It's one thing to double team him. It's one thing to triple team him. And I know they didn't have DK Metcalf. They didn't have Calvin Austin, and that totally changes the offense. But I don't know that I've ever seen anything like that. And Myles wasn't the only one who said it. I spoke to Alex Wright, the other defensive end, about 2 hours ago. He said exactly the same thing. And guys, I talked to multiple people, multiple Browns coaches who said unprompted to me, unprompted after the game, all they cared about was Myles not getting the sack. See, Rob?
Well, even when you watched it, it felt that way. I mean, just watching it, like Myles would move. He's playing on the left. He's playing on the right. They moved him to the interior. They're moving him all over the place. And there was a certain, I felt like Rodgers' clock was sped up. And now you would be, right, against that Browns front, especially against Myles Garrett. It's going to force you to speed up your process. But as I watched it, I said to Don at one point, I'm like, it looks like he's just every snap, if it's a passing, you know, down, he's making sure he's kind of checked. Where's Myles? Okay, I got to get rid of it. And there were times where, you know, he's running for Myles. He's flushed into other pressure. I mean, look, you can say they lost the game because of that. I still think the DK Metcalf suspension, particularly whenever.
Huge.
Look, when the Steelers needed it, right? When they absolutely needed it, there was nobody there. You know, you basically had Pat Freiermuth. That was it. And then, you know, obviously the end of the game, you know, there's some breakdowns that kind of changed and offered them that opportunity. But then at the end of the game, who are you looking for? Like, you're right there. You got it. You have to get it three
times in a row.
MVS, right? That is who you're throwing to. And he ran the wrong. I think he made us the wrong site adjustment and ran the wrong route twice on three passes. Mm-hmm. And you're like, what the hell is going on? These guys have played together. It's not like they don't have a track record career-wise.
He got there a month ago.
They played together, obviously, in Green Bay. It's not like it was like someone brand new who he had no idea. He's like, I don't know how Aaron likes certain routes, or, you know, I don't know how to make certain route adjustments that he's going to recognize. It just looked like the ball was thrown and MVS is going the opposite way. And to me, I'm like, okay, this is when they lost it. They lost it with DK, because this is where DK comes up at this moment in the game. That's who you throw those balls to. And I think in three tries, DK might get one of those. Even if it's Denzel Ward, he might come down with one of those. That to me is what is so brutal now when you look back at the suspension and then obviously having to play in Week 18 to get in. I think if they don't get in, I think the Steelers fail against the Ravens, people are going to look at it and they're going to point at the league suspending DK Metcalf, and they're going to say that was it. They ended the Steelers' season when they suspended him for the remainder of the.
Well, DK Metcalf shouldn't have been acting a fool.
I get it. It's not DK Metcalf's fault. I'm not arguing, guys. I'm not arguing.
No,
you're
absolutely right on that goal to go situation, that you're like, this was starkly obvious. Like, this is DK time, and they don't have anybody. But I think all of this meshes together with you guys talking about the Steelers being hyper aware of Myles Garrett. Part of it is like, what's Aaron Rodgers waiting for? He's got to get rid of the ball quick because he's got these 15 tight ends that Arthur Smith likes rotating in for whatever reason. And nobody who could stretch the field, nobody who's being any danger to the Browns secondary. So he's just, I better get rid of the ball because I'm not waiting for Calvin Austin to run a deep route. Like, let's just get rid of it. And I think that it affected their whole offense. And you think about this game, this week 18 game is just crazy to me because not because I think both of these teams stink, to be honest. Like, neither of these teams is a great AFC North champion. But you think of the narratives that are going to change based on the outcome of one game. Either of these coaches is going to be on the hot seat. Absolutely. Whether that's true or not, what are we going to be talking about Monday? Well, maybe it's time for Mike Tomlin slash Jared Harbaugh.
It's going to be the conversation. 100%
absolutely.
Right.
Absolutely. If Lamar Jackson doesn't play in this game and they lose, you're going to hear a lot about that.
What if he doesn't play and Tyler Huntley plays lights out? No one's suggesting, by the way, that Tyler Huntley's the franchise quarterback there. But after, in light of Mike Preston's Baltimore Sun Christmas Eve column, just eviscerating Lamar, saying, I wouldn't pay him. He doesn't work hard. He never shows up on time. Like, and that him and Harbaugh are broken. Like, the storylines for this game are ridiculous.
Aaron Rodgers might go into retirement. Like, this might be the last game of one of the greatest careers of all time. And DK Metcalf getting blamed all offseason for screwing up the Steelers season because he went into the crowd. There's literally endless storylines for this game. It's not the greatest game. It's not the prettiest game. But it's the most intriguing game, I can tell you that.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, the sound you heard, and I said it during the broadcast after we wrapped up. Like, the sound you heard when that ball got knocked down by Denzel Ward, and Denzel said, I don't know whose idea it was. Let me rephrase. He said, I don't know whose bright idea it was to throw at me three times, but that was the wrong idea. And Aaron Rodgers, Alex Wright told me, he's like, maybe the backside was shut down, meaning he wasn't going to go left either way. But on that final fourth down, he's got Kenneth Gainwell, who was lined up to chip Miles. Kenneth Gainwell ran a little Texas route to the left. He could have walked into the end zone. If Aaron just looks left, it's an easy touchdown. And then we're having the decision, do you go for two? You go to overtime. But where was I? I lost my train of thought. That Steelers team, the one that I saw, is not good enough to win a playoff game. And we're going to be in the same position with or without DK.
Neither are Ravens.
We're going to be in the same position we were. And that is great. You're 9-8. You made the playoffs. You bring back Aaron Rodgers. You don't have a franchise quarterback. Those who wanted Tomlin out are going to still want him out. But the sound you heard when that ball felt incomplete was either NBC or ESPN or Mike North at 345 Park celebrating have this one to put up on a platter for big television turkey audiences week 18.
Wait, don't Charles, you think the Ravens might make a playoff run still?
Here's my thing with the Ravens, right? Because there's a lot of layers to this. And the Lamar thing, I understand it again, it feels like the sky is falling again, but it's not the first time this has happened with Lamar. And I actually ended up writing about this because when you dial it back, Lamar's never had an agent. Every time there's this crossroads between Lamar and the front office or Lamar and John Harbaugh, what ends up happening is you get dribs and drabs about Lamar. You get dribs and drabs about, like, how injured is he? You know, is the knee that bad? Is his ankle that bad?
I remember that.
You know, now it's the back. And then it's like, okay, is he, what's going on with his diet? You know, what's going on with, you know,
we've heard that one though for 10 years.
Sure. No, right. That's true. But always like, oh, why is he so insular? You know, when it comes to some of the surrounding team. But the problem with that is we never have his narrative to balance it out because he doesn't have an agent. There's not a representative out there going, hey, look, okay, fine.
You don't this need it.
He's got two broken bones on his back. You know, like
he uses social media.
I know he's
sparingly and cryptically at times. Sometimes they'll be direct. Sometimes he uses it cryptically. It always feels like the worst possible situation because there's never really any balance to it. So I will say this to defend Lamar: every time stuff like this happens, he ends up responding in a way where we're like, oh my God, why were we so freaking out about this? Why don't we think nobody could trade for him? Like, why did we think he wasn't worth that contract? This is, and I think this moment right now in Ravens history, I think it can break either way. But I think if say he comes back. Maybe we find out on Wednesday. Okay, look, he's going to be good enough to go. He goes out there and he plays. Derrick Henry plays the way that he played against the Packers. Let's say all of a sudden,
36
everything
carries.
Feels... let's say all of a sudden everything gets feels rejuvenated, right? And you get into the playoffs. And then John Harbaugh steps in front of the team and says, look, gone through a lot this year. People thought we were a Super Bowl caliber team. We came in, our defense got chewed up by injuries. We had all these problems. Lamar has been banged up all season long. You know, Derrick Henry, we did not have the same groove we had last year. But guess what? We're in the postseason now. Now let's take the 2025 regular season. I got it here on tape. Here's the sledgehammer. I'm going to ball it up right in front of you. We're done. Now we move forward and we are the guys. And guess what? Look at the rest of the AFC guys. Look at the rest that's of the true. AFC that we're going up against. Mm-hmm. I don't see another AFC team out there that's just absolutely scary. And if I was John Harbaugh, I would tell another story. I'd say, you know what? I'd say, let's go back to 2011 when the 9-7 New York Giants got into the playoffs. Did not mm-hmm. look like anything like a team that's going to, and they run all the way to the Super Bowl and beat the Patriots. They beat a 13-3 team, a 13-3 team, like a 12-4 team. They did nothing but knock a 15-1 Packers team. That's the tale I think John Harbaugh can tell. If they come back, they win this game, Lamar's a part of it. I think he can say, you know what? Let's squash all of it. Let's go do this. This is still on the table for us. And look at the rest of the AFC. You shouldn't be scared. There's no world beaters here right now. We can do this. We can still be who we were if we pull this back together. We still have Lamar. We still have Derek. We're not this dead team that everybody thought we were, and now it doesn't matter. It's 0-0 now. To me, it's intriguing, and that's what makes me think in this season of seasons and the fact that everyone will say it's fixed. It'll walk right into that storyline. It'll walk right into everybody who thinks it's all scripted. I'm just telling you, I think it's set up for that, but obviously they got to beat the season.
Stop. All right. Listen, this is the longest A block TV term, in recorded pod, our pod inside coverage history. So let's do this. Let's break. We're going to come back and talk about the mess that is the NFC South. I checked the rules again this morning. Somebody legally has to win that division. We'll hit that. And if you have either one of you final thoughts on the AFC North, we could do them as well. Don't go anywhere. Inside coverage. It's Inside Coverage here on Yahoo. Andrew Siciliano, Charles Robinson, Frank Schwab. Just to wrap up the AFC North conversation, I not try to hammer the Steelers. Aaron Rodgers is a Hall of Fame quarterback. Clearly, every team has a plan for Myles Garrett. That is the team that is the guy you circle. That is the game wrecker. That is the werewolf. That is the guy that you have to avoid. You put two guys, three guys on him. That happens every single week. The Bills did it last week. The difference is Josh Allen is a Marvel character, and they have James Cook, the Bills do, and they have a dominating run-blocking offensive line, the Bills do, and they have the talent to put three guys over Myles Garrett and compensate and win and score points. And the Steelers don't. Broderick Jones is out and Isaac Seumalo is out. And that's a makeshift left side of the offensive line. And without DK and without Calvin Austin, they simply have no downfield threat. But bigger picture here with the Steelers. I know we talked about John Harbaugh and Lamar Jackson and circling the wagons and anybody can make a run. I truly do believe that. But we are now, guys, I think we've gone back to the Bills game. And go back a month ago, Aaron Rodgers hurts his wrist. They're doing Fire Tomlin at Acrisure. They're booing Renegade. By the way, overrated song, totally unimpressed. I don't understand why that thing works, but that's neither here nor there. And we said it was over. And then they go on this run. And then they beat the Lions. They win three in a row. And then they're walking off the field, Tomlin and Rodgers and Cam Hayward last week at Ford Field. You're the best. No, you're the best. I love you. No, I love you. And they're back. They are back. But if they lose to the Ravens, or let's say they get in and they're one and done, because they're always in and one and done, we're back to square one. And I was all for Aaron Rodgers. Because they had no better option. Like, why not? What's the worst that could happen? You get in and lose in the first round? Okay. There's no obvious quarterback answer right now. In retrospect, maybe they could have taken Shador. But he needed time on the bench to get ready. And he's still not there, but he's showing progress. And the future is bright. But they had no obvious immediate answer for week one, other than Aaron Rodgers. That was him. But I also said at the time, see, Rob, that if they do this, and if they're either 8-9 or 9-8 and one and done, then they may have to blow the entire thing up. And I don't mean fire Tomlin, because I don't think the Rooneys ever will. But you are once again picking somewhere between like 21 and 25 with no obvious path to finding the guy who can win in Cleveland, laugh all you want, the guy that can replace Ben Roethlisberger, and they haven't done that. So I'll ask this question. In advance of this game, let's say they lose. Charles Robinson, was it worth it for the Steelers to do it this way this year?
No. Well, no, of course, the results. I mean, it's as simple as the results, right? If you don't, we wrote about this coming into the season. We talked about how their draft class was structured, the players that they chose in the draft, the players that they brought in via free agency, the amount of time that they waited on Aaron Rodgers to get in there with the team. And we said, this is it. They're pushing everything into this season. It's basically an all or nothing gambit in 2025 with Aaron Rodgers. So if you fail, if you flunk it, if you don't make it into the playoffs at all, and I would say even if you make it into the playoffs and you're one and done, as you said, you live up to the same standard that it's been for so long, you failed. Like, you've tried, you've done everything you could do, and it didn't work. And yeah, I would say it's probably time to start thinking about something dramatic. And I don't know if that means, is there going to be change with Omar Khan at the general manager position all the way down to Mike Tomlin and the head coach, straight down into the quarterback? Are you going to take, you know, the three cornerstones of every franchise, general manager, head coach, and quarterback, and just go, okay, that's it, we're done, and now we have to recalculate completely, and it's a total rebuild? I would say that if you're moving on from Mike Tomlin and or Aaron Rodgers, it's a total rebuild. That's where you are. And so if you're going to move on from one, you might as well move on from the other. If you can get a commitment, and I know this sounds insane, but if you can get a commitment for Aaron Rodgers in 2026, I think you keep Mike Tomlin for one more year, but you go out and you get the quarterback. I think you draft the quarterback, whatever you need to do, you go and you get the replacement for Aaron Rodgers, whether he likes it or not. And you say, we are actually, in fact, starting over, but we're beginning with the baby step of making sure that we have the quarterback in place. I just don't know if you can do that, though, when you know you might still move on from either the general manager or the head coach after 2026.
I think the original question of whether it's worth it, I think it was. And just in...
Really?
They have... What was their other path? To just go with Mason Rudolph and go 4-13? Like...
I love C-Rob, how you looked...
Divisional championships are still pretty cool. Like, that's a decent accomplishment.
This was so Brady Bunch. Hold on, Frank. Did you see what C-Rob did? He kind of looked to his left, like right at you. It looked like straight Brady Bunch open there. Yeah. It was so cool. Okay, keep going as you were.
So I think, like, look, if the Steelers fall short, you go 9-8, it's going to seem like a disappointment, but I don't know if they had a better option. No, I will say, if they did something like, we got to pass on Jackson Dart because it's going to make Aaron mad and he's not going to sign with us. Yeah, okay, that was probably a mistake. Then it's probably not worth it. But overall, I'm fine with it. The results are the results.
Frank, but
it just goes
back
to...
Frank, they're not answering the question. Was it worth it? Not was it a better option.
It's probably unfair for me to ask.
It's not about the better option. Was it worth it?
Like, what?
So you've burned a year where you... Okay, well, in 2026, if you had not gone this route, okay, well, let's say you do draft Jackson, you draft Jackson Dart.
Okay.
You kickstart the process one year earlier. Now you're kicking it. You kick the can down the road. And by the way, you committed money to DK Metcalf, who hit a fan or something close to it. Okay.
They could totally take that money off.
Now they can.
Like I said,
if
they made significant quarterback decisions based on, well, Aaron Rodgers is coming in, yeah, then that's a mistake, obviously. But we don't know that. Like, we can't sit here and say that for
yes,
sure.
Frank, we do.
Because,
Frank.
Oh, come on.
So maybe the Jackson Dart one, but they had other opportunities to draft Shador Sanders, did the other 31 teams before they got to the Browns. I'm not saying that
Tyler
he would have been the magic
Tyler
answer,
looks pretty
but
good.
They
Even
could
Tyler
have drafted
Shuck
a quarterback.
Looks good, guys. Tyler Shuck was not exactly sure. He's not embarrassed himself.
So if that's the case, fine. If that is the case, then fine. They made a mistake with this whole Aaron Rodgers thing. But I will go back. I just want to point out that we're talking about, like, literally going back to how much stakes are on the line here. We are talking about, if the Steelers win, you're probably feeling okay. Like, hey, one division title, we can still retool. And if they lose, we're talking about a total rebuild. Like, that's based on a result of one game. That's how big this game is. And it's absolutely true.
See, I don't disagree with anything.
If they lose, you probably
do say, next week,
let's
just
start.
Yeah,
I agree.
No,
I think even if they go one and done, if they go 10 and 7,
even if they're one and done, because they're always one and done. They're always one and done.
I agree with Andrew.
You think Tomlin's gone if they go 10 and 7 to go one and done?
I don't think they will ever fire him. But the same people, the same loud voices, some of them write columns, most of them are just angry fans on social media. The same loud voices that wanted him out, every other year they've gone one and done.
But they're going to want him out no matter what.
And the same ones who were booing him after the Buffalo game are going to be the same ones who want it now. It's up to Mike Tomlin. We're going to have, okay, a month ago we're having the conversation. If Mike Tomlin wants out, this might be the year he just taps out. Ben Roethlisberger, maybe he should go coach Penn State. Okay, those conversations will get rebooted Sunday night or a week from now, just for my money. By the way, we're going to be talking about it next week as well. The same conversation, we will reboot it. Let's get to the NFC South. I joked before, but it is a rule. Somebody has to win every division. And under the current rules, which may change, that division winner, all eight of them, will get a home game in the playoffs on Wild Card Weekend. So either the Buccaneers or the Carolina Panthers, both of whom lost on Sunday in Week 17, when they play Week 18, the winner will win the NFC South. Now, I mentioned the Falcons. If the Falcons beat the Rams on Monday night, we're recording before that game, and then the Falcons beat the Saints next week. In other words, the Falcons go 2-0 to close the season. That would give the Panthers a backdoor in where they would still win the NFC South, even if they lost to the Bucs. But neither of these two teams should be hosting a home playoff game. I know the Panthers have some good wins. I know they beat the Packers. They beat the Rams. They have good wins. Guys, do you know how bad the Bucs have been of late? If the Buccaneers win the division, if they beat the Panthers and take the NFC South, they will do so, according to Greg Allman, who covers the Bucs and has forever, with the worst final 9-game stretch of any playoff team in the Super Bowl era. In other words, 60 years of football. They'd be 2-7 in their last 9. Oh. The 2010 Seahawks and the 2020 Bears went 3-6 down the stretch and made the playoffs. This would be worse. Yet, Frank, we'll start with you on this one. Yet, Todd Bowles, is he safe? Is Baker still the guy? What's going on here?
There was a prominent report on Sunday that was incredulous that anybody could believe that Todd Bowles is on the hot seat. Well, I don't know about all that. Like, you could say they should or they shouldn't fire Todd Bowles. Okay, I can get with that. You could say they really won't fire Todd Bowles. Well, or they won't. That's up to ownership. But to be like, how dare you insist that Todd Bowles isn't on the hot seat? If they lose on Saturday, going 1-8 in their final 9 games after getting healthy, by the way, this isn't a team ravaged by injuries like the Colts, all right? Like,
that's weird.
They've been getting better, supposedly, and healthier, and they go 1-8 down the stretch. Todd Bowles' record at that point, counting playoffs, would be 35-36. And we're supposed to believe that Todd Bowles is the safest coach. He's Mike Tomlin all of a sudden. You can't fire him. No way. Like, give me a break. Like, yes, of course Todd Bowles should be on the hot seat. You know, I was the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, and I watched them give away that division with a 1-8 record down the stretch with a pretty healthy team full of a lot of really good players. I would be like, no, we're not running this back. I'm sorry. This isn't happening. Yes, they've won 3 division championships in a row. They've done so with a mediocre record every year. They just happen to play in the worst division of football. So this whole idea that, like, how dare you say Todd Bowles on the hot seat? Todd Bowles should be on the hot seat if they lose. Why wouldn't he be on the hot seat if they lose 8 of their final 9 games and lose to the Carolina Panthers or the NFC South? Are we kidding now? Are we really kidding about this, that we'd be so incredulous?
Not only that, Frank. I mean, consider if they lose this game, who's he losing to? He's losing to Dave Canales, who's a really good coach in Tampa, right? Well, then who does Dave Canales get replaced by? Liam Cohen.
Yep.
Who's a damn good coach who's done really well in Jacksonville.
I think he's done this year. I haven't really checked in on him, but I think he's done okay.
I think they desperately wanted to keep Liam Cohen. And I think they wanted to keep Liam Cohen to the point where if they had known how it was going to go and they were going to lose him to Jacksonville, they might have fired Bowles last year and said, you know what, we're just going to promote Liam Cohen because we want to keep the synergy between he and Baker Mayfield and the offense. That's what's important to us. They did it once before when they fired Lovie Smith to, you know, encapsulate the offense around Jameis Winston. I mean, I look at right now the Buccaneers, and what's intriguing to me about this idea with Todd Bowles is there's an element of Baker Mayfield being tied up into this, because Baker Mayfield's contract, it has one more year left on it in 2026. And you have to decide, are we going to pay him? And they have to have this conversation this offseason. Do we do this extension, particularly in the last like seven games, Frank? I mean, if you go back to November 16th, when they lost to the Buffalo Bills, he's got 10 interceptions this year. Eight of them are in the last seven games. And I think he's got he's got a few fumbles in that expanse too. It's, you know, some people are calling him like a check down merchant over the last like 2 months of the season. And as you said, now they're healthy to the point where the weapons, the suite of weapons that they wanted on the field, where they really thought they can, you know, take the roof off the offense. All of a sudden we'd see it. And instead that has not happened. It's certainly concerning, but I think the problem is if you fire Todd Bowles, what are you now staring at with Baker? Like, are you saying to the next coach coming in, we're hiring you because we want to get the most out of Baker, we want to extend Baker this offseason? Or are you saying, we keep Todd Bowles one more year, we ride Baker out through 2026, and if this does not fix itself in 2026, if we can't figure out how to realign these pieces, we say goodbye to Todd Bowles, and maybe we say goodbye to Baker Mayfield as well. Like, I think you have to factor Baker's contract situation into this too, because you have a decision to make this offseason, and it's going to affect, if you fire Todd Bowles, it's going to affect that next head coach. Yeah.
We were talking MVP for Baker, and for the record, I'm a Baker fan. I really am.
I am too.
You know, everyone likes to go, the Browns were so stupid to get rid of him. That's a different conversation. Those same people acted. He just went to Tampa the next day and became an MVP. He's had a nomadic existence here. Obviously, Carolina cut him. That was a unique circumstance, but they cut him. He went to the Rams for 5 minutes. He had his moment on Thursday night, certainly. And then he eventually went for like a $5-8 million, whatever it was, prove it contract with the Bucs. And bless him, that he bet on himself and he has cashed in. Like, I am happy for him. But midseason, we're talking MVP. And we're not anymore. Yep. And these two teams have a combined point differential of negative 100. Negative 100. The Panthers are negative 67. The Bucks are negative 33 with the point differential here. Just in comparison, the only other team. Okay, so the lowest point differential of any of the teams right now in a playoff position is the Steelers at plus eight. The other two in the NFC South are at negative 100 combined. Like, the Saints are negative 75. Like, they're in the neighborhood with the Panthers somehow. It's so absurd. Bad. So they're like, you're looking at, you know, people saying, well, do the Rams have anything to play for? Yeah. If they get to the 5 seed, they get to go to the NFC South.
They're going to be like 10-point favorites.
And anybody would
want
to go to the NFC South. Yes.
Yeah, Panthers. Panthers are kind of crazy. I like the level of crazy with the Panthers, because this season, I mean, like, seriously, like, it's like you have a chef. It could be like Eric Repair one day, and the next day it's the Swedish Chef, right? Like, he's either serving you a 5-star meal or he's burning with the hatch, burning the kitchen down.
Did you see that? Bryce Young had 54 yards in a game yesterday.
I know. And then there's been games where you've watched him and been like,
Bryce Young had a completion of more than 5 yards in the air. True story.
I like the level of you not necessarily knowing what game you're going to get. Yeah, it's kind of crazy.
You can win at Lambeau Field, or you can get swept by the Saints. Who knows? We just don't know.
So that is the Saturday ESPN schedule. They actually got two fun games, meaningful games. Last year it was Browns and Ravens in the early window. Ravens needed to win it, and then it was Bengals-Steelers in the late window. This one's Panthers, Bucks early, Seahawks, Niners late. I mean, that's fun. Yay, fun. Okay, coming up, the airing of grievances. We will tell you who has let us down the most. And the answer isn't VMix. Inside joke.
Inside coverage continues. So it's inside coverage here, and I don't know about you guys, C. Rob and Frank. I don't know about you guys, but very often at the end of the year, when you're raising a glass, you're getting reflective and introspective, and not only looking ahead to the coming year with positive thoughts, hopefully, but you look back as well. And maybe you replay, because I'm somebody that does always look back. I'm that guy, right? You replay some of the things you wish you did differently, and you try to learn from those things, certainly, but also the things that disappointed you this year, and maybe the people that disappointed you this year. No names, but it hit me today. Maybe we should do that with NFL teams, because we know who's in or who's out. Like, there's only two spots open: AFC North champion, NFC South champion. So we know who didn't make it. The Lions, the Vikings, they are certainly disappointing in the NFC. In the AFC, the Chiefs and whomever loses in the AFC North, disappointing. The Bengals. I mean, like, there are a lot of teams that let us down this year. So this is like this is an airing of grievances. Was it, what was George Costanza's dad's name? Was it Ned? Is it Ned Frank. Costanza?
Yeah.
Frank Costanza.
I should have known that.
Okay. Yes.
Jerry Stiller, Frank Costanza. All right, may he rest in peace. The airing of grievances. Charles, you go first. Who has let you down the most this year?
Yeah, it's got, I mean, look, it, when you go back and you look at the Super Bowl favorites, some people are going to say, oh, it's the Chiefs, and or it's, you know, the Ravens if they don't make it in. It's the Detroit Lions. I think when you look at the Detroit Lions and in the micro, where you're like, okay, this is happening again with all these injuries. Why can't they keep guys healthy over the expanse of a season, particularly on defense? But then they play the Pittsburgh Steelers. Right, Niners overcame it. You look at the Pittsburgh Steelers game, and you're like, all of a sudden, you can't run the football. You can't run the football at all. Jared Goff is turning the ball over left and right. You just suffer a complete collapse at home in an absolute have-to-have-it game. You know, that to me, that team, the Lions, I don't think have really ever recovered since the NFC title game loss. I know they went 15-2 in 2024, completely gassed. They get throttled by the Washington Commanders last year as the number one seed in the NFC. And I feel like that was just part of the descent from that NFC title game. This was supposed to be the season, even with the loss of the coordinators, where if they were going to get it back together and get themselves onto a consistent track, they were going to show up this season. They still had all the talent on the field. I think the talent actually got better in the offseason. And yet, what happens? You flop your way completely out of the playoffs, and you do it in a game where you can't lose to that Pittsburgh Steelers team that now just loses 13-6 to the Cleveland Browns. I mean, it's just, I don't know that there's a more disappointing situation than in Detroit. And I think it's going to be a very, very interesting offseason in terms of Jared Goff. I think some of the contract extensions they still have to sign with other players, and also that coaching staff, I think you're going to see some change in Detroit.
Yeah, you're going to, the thing about the Lions, I can see them bouncing back. I mean, their metrics are really good. They just, record stinks. I still think they can
still
bounce
have great
back.
Players. Right. Right.
They do. They have a lot of talent. So I'm not giving up on them for 2026, but definitely disappointing. Obviously, I could have picked the Ravens. I could have picked the Chiefs. Like, those are clearly good answers, but I'm going a little different direction. I watch this Vikings team. They're 8-8, and they have the second worst passer rating in the NFL, 74.3. And it's, you just wonder, what if you would have gone, did a U-turn at quarterback? What if you would have brought back Sam Darnold? What if you would have kept on Daniel Jones? We didn't expect J.J. McCarthy to be this bad, but he has been. Carson Wentz wasn't great. Max Brosmer, really bad. I had 3 net passing yards and a win over the Lions. It almost made me more frustrated with the Vikings of, like, if you could just have an average, we can see the defense is awesome. You still got Justin Jefferson, who's having a lost season, Jordan Addison, all these guys. You have a playoff team. They went 14-3 last year, but your quarterback position is so bad that you're fighting to just get above 500. And by the way, if they get to 9-8 with that quarterback situation, A, it's a pretty good accomplishment, and B, it just highlights how much more this team could have been this season. This could have been another 12-win season for the Vikings with just mediocre quarterback play. They didn't get it. Now, the one thing you could point to is in 2023, the Colts won 8 games. They had the second worst passer rating in the NFL. Come back, fix the quarterback situation, start the season 7-1. I know it didn't last that long and it didn't turn out well, but if you're the Vikings, you sit there and say, everything's still in place from that 14-3 team, except the quarterback. We got to figure that out somehow. Easier said than done, I guess, but right now the Vikings have to be looking and saying, we just wasted a season where we had a championship level defense and a good enough team around everybody to at least be in the playoffs.
So I got a note here on the Colts. You mentioned them, and the Colts are not going to be my answer. My answer is the Bengals, but I toyed with it for a while about going with the Colts. Listen, the injuries happened, and with Daniel Jones getting hurt, they totally fell apart. The Phillip Rivers thing was a great story. Sadly, it's probably coming to an end. It was totally worth it. The journey was worth it there for Phillip Rivers, and he was adamant about that after the game yesterday. So this is from The Athletic today. Since the merger, whenever we say that, friends, that means 1970, AFL-NFL merger. Since the merger, only five teams had won 7 of 8 to open a season, 7-1, and then gone on to miss the playoffs. The Colts became the sixth. So in week 10, according to The Athletic and their playoff simulator, the New York Times-owned Athletic, the Colts' chances of making the playoffs, 98%. Wow. 98.
Wow.
We sat here talking about the road to the Super Bowl going through Lucas Oil. Like they might have the AFC Championship game and then tear that thing down and get ready for the combine a couple of weeks later. Now the Colts are without a spot in the postseason for the fifth consecutive year. And I do think, look, I was the one 3 weeks ago who, sitting in this chair, said, are you an idiot if you think Shane Steichen's in trouble? And I don't think he is at all. However, you do have a new owner. Jim Mersay is gone. His daughter, Carly, has taken over, and no one has any idea what she will do, how her decision-making process will go, because she is new to the job. So there is an unknown there. Chris Ballard, I think, is a very good GM, and I think that with Daniel Jones playing well, you saw all the height, weight, speed guys that he drafted. You saw them unlocked, right? Much like Micah Parsons did that for all the guys on the defensive side of the ball that Brian Gutekunst had drafted in Green Bay. Daniel Jones did that to all the guys offensively that Chris Ballard had drafted. And you're like, all right, they're the guys that we thought they were going to be. So I don't think Chris Ballard is in trouble, but is he GM for life? Does he have tenure? No one knows what's going to happen there. I didn't choose the Colts because it was an injury. I chose the Bengals, not because I'm piling on because I'm the Browns guy, but because I remember week one. And I remember that the Bengals spent their entire offseason. They rearranged the way they train, what time they do things, how they do things. They spent money on Ja'Marr Chase and T. Higgins, and eventually they brought back Trey Hendrickson, although he wasn't happy with how the deal went down, and he missed the entire camp and preseason. But they brought these pieces back, and they were so certain it was going to be different. They weren't going to be 0-2 out of the gate. No. This team was going to win out of the gate, and they did win week one. But talking to some Bengals people before that first game, they were confident. Everybody is confident week one. But they were, I mean, there was no way the Browns could possibly beat them. I'll tell you right now, the Browns were the better team week one. They held the Bengals to 7 yards in the second half in the opener. 7. The Bengals won to their credit. But I got out of there going, this team's not that good. I don't think they're that good. And then Joe Burrow got hurt. And then we found out they weren't that good. And it's disappointing, not for me, but to their fans, because, and you see it on Joe Burrow's face the last couple of weeks, and we've overanalyzed it and psychoanalyzed it and taken a deep dive into what's gone wrong in this man's head. Well, they've been losing. That's what's gone wrong. He got hurt. And if he does not get hurt, it's a different conversation. But he's had trouble staying healthy. And that is the story there. And Zach Taylor was passionately defending the team's defense and all the young players and the strides they have made under first-year coordinator Al Golden since their bye week. And now they've been much better of late. Okay, I get it. But the Bengals are going to have some hard conversations in the offseason, because they did that last offseason and it didn't work. So what now? I think they are at a crossroads. I think their phone will ring. Teams are going to try to get Burrow. They won't trade him. Like Mike Brown would rather tell Joe Burrow, go sit on an Orange County, California couch with Carson Palmer than ever trade him. But they to me are one of the more disappointing teams in the league.
Yeah.
Nods.
I mean, you look and
Zach Taylor. Yeah.
Why? No, I'm sitting here thinking,
we're just in some silence, like, oh my God, he just buried the Bengals. it's over.
I just wonder, you so saying all that makes me wonder.
It just didn't work. Joe got hurt.
Yeah, it didn't work.
And we're left to wonder, if he didn't get hurt, it's not just would Joe it have all hurt? Worked?
It's not just, I wonder why Zach Taylor's so safe. I do. I wonder why. Like, why? Easy. What's he done? You lose him three, maybe not. I don't know. But you don't make the playoffs 3 straight years in Joe Burrow's prime? I don't know. I don't know if it's working there anymore.
I mean, Paul Danner.
I just would like to see
covers that Burrow, team.
Like, is he going to be healthy? Like, is Burrow ever going to be healthy for more than a
was
season
last
at
year
a time?
He put on an MVP performance and they missed the playoffs.
For more than a season at a time, man. Like, I'm like, are we going to get to a point where it's the Andrew Luck thing, where we're all of a sudden we're in year like 7, right. 8, and it's like he's just I'm tired of rehabbing. I'm tired of constantly.
If you're the Jets, what do you offer? You got 5 number ones in the next 2 years. What do you offer?
The world. All of them. Why not?
Like, all of them?
Jets. They're gonna offer it for Kyler Murray, so whatever.
Oh, God.
Just depends.
No
just
one
depends
is offering.
The, Frank. Just depends what the Madden ratings are. That Woody's just got to check in with his kid for the Madden ratings. Then we'll figure out who the Jets
now,
quarterback
I'm now disappointed in Frank's mic. That those words made it through to our ears. That is what I am disappointed in. Turn his microphone.
Kyler Murray to the Jets. It's going to happen.
Oh, my God. That is a great thought experiment. Where does Kyler go next season? It could be Arizona, by the way. That's a totally acceptable answer.
No, it's not.
The quarterback carousel is going to be so much fun. Tua.
Maybe Kyler's got a home there and doesn't play football.
Cousins,
that's what he ends up there. But no.
Does Rodgers retreat to Malibu and
Malik
say,
Willis.
Only call me on
Malik
FaceTime
Willis
audio?
Malik Willis is the guy we need to talk about. You guys
Malik
watch him play
Willis
on Saturday?
Malik's
got some juice now,
on
man.
Saturday.
He's going to be fun. He's going to be fun in free agency this year.
Lights out on Saturday. Like, Daniel Jones is going to get re-signed, right? I have no doubt there.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Does Matthew Stafford win an MVP and come back and say, hey, why don't we play this game again and raise my salary?
I think if they win the Super Bowl, I think he outweighs it. I think he's done. I think he'll.
Really?
You think he hangs it up?
Yeah. I do. I think if he wins the Super Bowl. And not only that, I don't think he's the only. I think there are people in that franchise who are like, I kind of think he's at that point where if we win a title, he'll feel like he's done everything he can
interesting.
Do. Interesting. He's ready to be done.
What happens if the Eagles produce 150 yards of offense and lose in the first round of the playoffs?
Oh, well, Jalen Hurts.
Just making faces at the screen.
Thanks. Yeah, 17 yards in the second half like yesterday. Yeah.
I would say that the entire offensive coaching staff and head coach are probably
just making faces. Okay,
maybe they get Kyler.
This is not a 2-hour podcast. Let's do one more thing before we go. C-Rob, you get to go first.
All right, I picked for today that there's a lot of votes that are going to be really interesting. We talked about MVP, Coach of the Year is going to be an insane voting process. But I think what's going to be really interesting now that Phillip Rivers has done what he's done is the Comeback Player of the Year vote. And I'm going to look off screen here. I want to read you the exact criteria for this vote because it leaves open a ton
of interpretation.
Such a
silly award.
The spirit of this award is to honor a player who has demonstrated resilience in the face of adversity by overcoming illness, physical injuries, or other circumstances that led him to miss playing time the previous season. So technically, unemployment is other circumstances. I ask you this, and because look,
what
Christian
if he chose
McCaffrey,
to retire?
Christian McCaffrey missed the majority of the season last year, right? And we've seen McCaffrey play this year; is absolutely lights out. Go watch him against the Bears. You're like, oh my God, he's still got all the juice, over 2,000 yards from scrimmage. Could be Offensive Player of the Year. The spirit of the award is, I believe, for Christian McCaffrey. But I'm telling you right now, because Sam Darnold got some votes last year, and I'm like, what did Sam Darnold come back from other than being on the bench with the 49ers? What did he come back from? He was a backup. But I'm telling you, I think Phillip Rivers is going to get votes. I'm just curious, how many votes is Phillip Rivers going to get because it's been so unbelievable that he's been able to step onto a field and be an adequate quarterback after missing the majority of 5 seasons.
He should get 44 votes.
44 votes.
He's 44.
I get it.
Yeah. Okay.
For, one like, for each of his children.
Yes.
Oh, come on. Come on. Phil's catching strays over here. So good.
Frank, you're one more thing, and I know you're tempted to do a 10-minute soapbox here on Comeback Player of the Year. I know you're tempted.
Comeback.
But give us your one more thing.
It's not quite as bad as Coach of the Year, but it's almost as bad. I'm going to stay with Philip Rivers here. And, you know, when he came back, we were all excited to just watch. Philip Rivers, great player, obviously. What I didn't realize is we were going to get Philip Rivers the philosopher. And I truly believe this. Some of the things he has said in these past 3 weeks are lessons we can all take in life. After the first game against Seattle, he talked about, hey, yeah, I was scared to come back, but I overcame that. I came back, and I hope some of my kids who I coach, and his kids, his children, look at that and say, hey, coach was scared, but he got over it. I can do that too. He comes back in week two after the 49ers game, and somebody asked him about losing, and he's like, you know what? Winning and losing isn't everything. We still, those touchdown drives we had against San Francisco to start the game, I still am going to take great memories from that. It's not all about just whether you won, and if you lose, there's nothing to be taken from that. I thought that was really interesting in this society we live in where you feel like if this quarterback doesn't win a Super Bowl, he's a failure. Like, there's something to be said about that. I also like, you know, Philip waiting after the game for D. Winters, who got a pick six off him late in that game, and saying he waited for him to be done with an interview and said, hey, D, you know, I dapped him up a little bit, talked a little bit about the play. Thought it was great sportsmanship that everybody could take a lesson from. And then after this game, which is probably his last start in the NFL, he probably isn't going to make another comeback, and Riley Leonard's probably going to start week 18. You know, somebody asked him about playing meaningless games. And he says, you know, meaningless games aren't even in my DNA. That game had meaning for me because, and he made the, you know, a comparison to when we used to go out and play in the playground, nobody cared who won those games or not, but we cared. We go home with a smile on your face, or you go home sad that you lost. Those games meant something to me. Every game means something to me. And I just think all of these lessons, Philip Rivers has been just using this as a psychologist couch almost, trying to teach us all there's more to life than just, hey, did the Colts make the playoffs? And there's more to life than they did throw for 300 yards and this and that. He has enjoyed every minute of his comeback, it seems. And again, just he has lightened up the NFL the past 3 weeks. And that's why everybody's talking about him. That's why me and Charles both mentioned him in our one more thing, because his comeback has been just more about him being on the field. I really think he's just done a great job being an ambassador for the game and for all of us to just take a lesson from him.
Corporate he's, speaking circuit. He's going to make some money.
Yeah, it'd be awesome. I'd go exactly. listen to Philip Rivers. I go listen to Philip Rivers' motivational speaker.
I'm motivating Manning. Except you're Philip Rivers. Right? What was that line in Anchorman? You're like a miniature Buddha to the little dog. Except Philip Rivers would be like a dad bod Buddha. Right? And he's great. My one more thing is not nearly as uplifting as either of yours. My one more thing is about the Jets, who are bad. And we know this. And they're playing
Grim
Brady
Reaper
Cook.
Today. You're just the Grim Reaper.
I'm not negative. I found this note. It's ridiculous. So the Jets heading into the final week of the season don't have an interception. Like, that's a real story.
Unbelievable.
Like,
unbelievable.
I can't make it up. The Jets haven't intercepted a pass. Their head coach, that man Aaron Glenn, is a former defensive back. No doubt it eats him up inside. So the Jets don't have a pick. If they don't get a pick week 18, and who do the Jets play? They're at the Bills. If they don't pick off whomever plays quarterback for the Bills, then it might not be Josh Allen beyond the first snap of the game to keep his starting streak alive. They would be the only team in the National Football League without an interception for the entirety of their football season since interceptions started being tracked in 1932.
Oh, my God.
Nobody's had less than two. Nobody's even if they get one, they set the record.
1932.
Unbelievable.
Before the Second World War. 1932. Before Jets.
Didn't even throw it.
Like, think about it. Before their actual Jets.
Wing T, you know?
Yeah.
Hold on.
They still managed to throw an interception with two passes a game. Yeah.
Alexa, when was the first jet airplane built?
Come on. Jesus
Christ. Come on. Jets didn't exist by the time. The first jet
airplane exists. There were still people alive who fought in the Civil War.
Babe Ruth was in his prime. Alexa, still. Babe Ruth had the called shot that year. Like, what are we doing?
We know Vanden, like, yes, we know there were jet bomb. They, like, the Germans developed jets during World War II, and they put, you know, bombs, missiles on jet engines. Anyway, I digress. We're going to World War II to end the show. We'll do that later. Whatever. On that note, guys, it's been fun. Let's do it again tomorrow. For Charles Robinson and Frank Schwab, my name is Andrew Siciliano. I don't know what we just did there. We are back on Tuesday to look ahead again to Week 18 and the final week of the NFL's regular season. My name is Andrew Siciliano. So long, everybody.